Blog Talk Radio.
And good evening, everyone. This is another edition of the Lucas and Crawford on B-Ball Show. We do this show every Wednesday night, 10 o'clock. Occasionally, we take a week off, but we try not to do that too often. If you're listening for the first time, we appreciate it tonight. If you listen often, we also appreciate that. And I am Greg Crawford. I am part of this show. You can follow me on Twitter at WC Hoops. And then also you can go to GregCrawfordBasketball.blogspot.com, or I am the COO of Kiyokawa Crawford Sports Management, and Kiyokawa is spelled K-I-Y-O-K-A-W-A, Kiyokawa Crawford Sports Management, and look us up there, and we will answer any questions you have and all that other good stuff. And I do this show and been doing it a long time with Richard Lucas, and hopefully Richard will be joining us tonight. Sometimes he has some things with his great State Farm insurance business that come up, and he has to take care of that. We fully understand that, and in that case, we sometimes cut the show a little bit early. But if you want to call into this show at 347-202-0927, that's 347-202-0927. You want to talk about the NBA playoffs. Of course, Cleveland, a big win tonight over Atlanta. That was interesting. Golden State, they'll be back in action tomorrow night against the Houston Rockets. That'll be another good game, I think, and we'll kind of ask Richard about that. But it's time to bring him on right now. Richard Lucas, the best center at Oregon after the great Blair Rasmussen. Richard was every bit as good. He's coached. He's played. He's done it all. He's on the TV talking about basketball. He is a great State Farm insurance owner. He's lost his fan card because he's gotten into real finesse gardening now. Great husband, great father, and a lot of other good things. Richard, how are you tonight? And nice to have you on again.
I'm doing just fine. It's been a great week of basketball with the NBA, and it's a fun time because between the draft and the NBA itself, it's a fun time to be a basketball fan.
Yeah, and it is, and it's also Richard. I got to be honest with you. You're so great at answering these questions. I get bugged about the insurance side of this program all the time, and It's actually that's probably a bad choice of words, isn't it, Richard? I get plaudits for the questions I ask you about insurance and, of course, the great State Farm. And Richard, I guess the one I'm going to ask tonight, I probably have never asked you. You live, unfortunately, we have neighbors. I always say I love people, but I don't like neighbors. But anyway, and occasionally stuff happens that the neighbor's, fence blows down and breaks your tree, or a tree blows down in their yard and breaks your tree, or their hula hoop in the backyard comes out, comes over and breaks your wind chimes. Yeah. What happens there from an insurance standpoint?
Well, from an insurance standpoint, if somebody has a big tree limb and it falls down and busts one of your, it busts a greenhouse in the backyard or a play structure or your fence or something along those lines.
Or a statue. Or
a really nice statue. If something like that happens, and actually what happens is the insurance on the neighbor's house would actually, your insurance would actually take care of that. If the neighbor is nice, they probably would help with deductibles and things like that. Or you could probably go to small claims court if they're not very nice to get deductibles back. But the liability, there's no real liability there if it's just kind of a freak accident that just kind of happens, because that's really what your homeowner's insurance is for. But if that tree limb, let's say, was dangling, and you had notified the neighbor, hey, listen, you've got to take care of this before something happened, and then that limb did fall, then at that point you could you have a really good chance of going after the neighbor's insurance to pay for the entire damage to your yard. So it kind of depends on what the situation is.
Richard, a follow-up to that, then we'll get into our basketball part. We always like to ask a couple insurance or one insurance question, and I like to follow it up because I know this is what the listeners want to know.
Yeah.
What about, like, you know, what is the misnomers about homeowners insurance? What are some things that it might not cover that you get calls about that people really think it does cover? Is it like somebody tripping on your sidewalk or, you know, various things?
Yeah, I'd say one of the bigger things that I get is that people don't realize that with homeowners insurance, first, there's two things. One, the liability that is with your homeowners policy, it actually extends with the owners or the members of the family who live in that house. An example being, if you are, you know, you're a golfer, right? You get out there and hit the ball.
Right.
And so if you are out there and you hit a nice one and it goes far, but all of a sudden some wind picks up and that ball goes flying and it hits someone and hurts them, well, there's actually liability coverage that could take care of the injury that you cause of hurting someone. So here's something that that happened not even actually on your own premises. This happened somewhere else, but yet the liability insurance from your homeowner's policy or your renter's insurance policy would extend to cover that. The second thing that I get the most is jewelry. That's a big one because, you know, most insurance policies, homeowner's policies, have limitations on how much they'll pay out for jewelry. And, you know, and so let's say there's, like in our case, $5,000 total of all jewelry is the most we pay out. Well, if you got a $15,000 ring and you lose it, the assumption is, oh, well, my insurance, you know, that's why I have insurance for, kind of thing. But you may call me and say, I lost my ring, and come to find out, you know, that there wouldn't be any coverage there or be limited coverage there. So I'd say those are a couple of things that most people are unaware of, but that's our jobs, is to be educators.
And Richard, just a one quick question here, and we'll get to basketball. But, you know, as far as insurance, and I think it's something you just don't, you know, out of sight, out of mind. Are most people pretty naive about insurance? And I'm not throwing people under the bus because I'm the first to admit that I'm probably naive about it.
Yeah, I would say that. I don't know if I like the term naive, though, because to me, naive is it means that there's – I guess more I want to say is that people are just not aware about really the details of what insurance – how insurance works. And naive, I guess, feels a little bit more of a negative connotation, I guess. But I think it's just more of – insurance is complex, and it can be, it can have a lot of moving parts to it. But everybody realizes that they have to have it. So instead of really learning or understanding it, it's just, you know, hey, am I covered? Can I drive? Yes. Okay. Thank you. That's all I need to know. You know, and that's kind of the attitude that a lot of people take. So we actually do try to educate as much as possible so that consumers are a little more aware of exactly what they're purchasing, and so they can make you know, more in you know, just better decisions when they're trying to choose the insurance that's best for them and their families.
Richard, Bill Russell, Wilt Chamberlain, Walt Bellamy, Nate Thurman. I remember Nate Thurman played like 30 games one year with a broken shoulder. And I know you probably remember that. Walt Bellamy played with a broken foot for 15 games. Wilt was always banged up. Kareem, same thing, bad ankles, bad knees.
Yeah.
Russell, bad hands, always getting whacked in the hands and swelling up and everything. Dwight Howard character, is he a wimp?
You know, I don't know if you'd call it a wimp, but you know, I don't think that guys today really have the real internal fortitude to really push through things. And part of it, I think, is, and you can probably correct me if I'm wrong about this, but I think part of it is also coming from the franchise themselves. I mean, I feel like you've got a commodity like a Dwight Howard who is worth so much money that you're almost fearful of putting that person in more harm's way. So this might, it may be a combination between himself feeling like, hey, I can't go, and the organization saying, you know what, we're worried that this is going to turn into something that could potentially be worse, and we're not going to take that risk. So, this guy's worth a ton of money.
Yeah, and you know, Richard, you've worked with me for coming up on 6 years. It's been a great partnership. No matter whether we're on TV or radio, you have never heard me say this, ever, and you can validate this. I never complain about how much basketball players make, but this guy is overpaid.
You know what? You have never said that. But, I mean, I look at it this way. Is when you're dealing with, like, homeowners, like with someone buying a house, and you look at it and you go, you know, why would someone spend that kind of money? Or how can someone really believe that that house is worth that? And guess what? Somebody pays for it. So, hey, if the market's saying that this guy's worth whatever, how much he makes, then, hey, more power to him and the organization. Unfortunately, he hasn't helped any organization really get very far. So there's still hope for him. He's still a relatively young guy, but there's a lot of guys who get paid a ton of money who, you know, have not helped their organizations go very far.
Do you feel like what's your take on the Tom Tebow situation with the Bulls and all that, and just what's your thought on that? Because the guy, I mean, people are, like, popping up out of nowhere. You know, the Team USA won with them, and Derrick Rose, who was easily likes to pop off, loves the guy, but yet no one wants him there.
Yeah. You know, it's kind of this, it's sad that is the that is how sports in general is nowadays. I mean, there is just absolutely no patience. There's no patience with fans. There's no patience with owners or GMs. There's so much pressure to win and win now. He's done as good as he possibly can dealing with a myriad of injuries coming in and out of that organization. Remember how bad they were prior to him getting there. It's unfortunate that they it feels like he's just kind of getting forced out. But that's just the way it is, and it's almost like you that's what you sign up for. You know what I mean? It's like you put your name on the dotted line. That's just kind of what you sign up for. I mean, because you know, you and I even talked about the fact that Cavs coach might not make it through, and you know, they may make it to the finals and potentially win, and he still may get fired. You know what I mean? So it's like it's amazing how fickle people are. And I'll give you another example. Mark Helfrich here takes over for Chip Kelly, and I'm telling you, the bar has been raised to an astronomical level that if Helfrich loses 4 games in a season, it's going to be definitely, I mean, absolute calls for his job. And that's just the, you know, if you go back 7 years, you know, if you went 9-4 in a season with a bowl game win, that was a successful year. And now the way it is now, it's just, it wouldn't be. So it's just unfortunate because there's just so much pressure on all these players and coaches.
Richard, you know, I'm going to throw in a football question because I know you love the game of football.
Yep.
My Duck fanatic guys, and you love your Ducks no matter what sport, being a graduate and playing there at high-level basketball, but they're telling me that if you think that the Ducks had speed up to now, nobody's seen anything like this team they're going to have in 2015.
Yeah, the guys that they have, well, the guys they have returning and then the guys they have coming in, they're able to find the guys who fit their system, and that is about speed, and that is about getting guys in space and letting them just do their jobs. And the part that's going to be the most interesting for everybody is obviously that quarterback who is going to be the one to follow, you know, the Heisman Trophy winner and number two pick in the draft, NFL draft. And so whoever that person is, I don't think they have to be world beaters because there is so much returning, especially on the offensive side, but they have to be somebody who can really handle and be a kind of that game manager. And that's not a bad thing. I mean, that's what they say Russell Wilson is a game manager, you know, which you know, he's had back-to-back, you know, Super Bowls. So, I mean, it's if they can just find somebody who doesn't have to be a world beater, doesn't have to be Mariota, just be solid and get the ball in the hands of the guys who can actually make plays. And I think the Ducks are going to be right there.
You know, speaking of the Ducks, Richard, you tell me if I'm wrong or you can agree with me. It's got to be one way or another.
Got it.
When it comes to Duck basketball, I'm almost under the impression that, you know, everybody's kind of was talking this past year about, you know, the job that Tinko was doing, and he did do a phenomenal job at Oregon State. He's got a great recruiting class, one of the best, maybe the best ever in the history of the basketball, which has had a storied program in the past coming in. But it's almost like the Ducks are sitting there, yeah, but we're still the Kings, and we're going to be damn good next year, and you're going to have to beat us.
So your question is that kind of the
what do you think about that? I made a long question with an answer.
I can tell you, though, that it feels like the Ducks are taking those taking their entire roster, they're looking at it, and they're surgically finding the right pieces to kind of fill in. And now, you know, they got the big kid who's, 6'11", I think, 6'10", 6'11", the junior college transfer, 22 points, 11 rebounds a game. To me, that was kind of the missing piece. He's still a little thin for my taste for a big guy, but it feels like kind of that was one of the missing pieces that they had. And then they got the other transfer Villanova, I believe, that transferred in,
right,
the guard.
Right.
Yeah, so, I mean, they're slowly and kind of almost quietly building a roster that is back to, remember those early days on Talking Ducks? We talked about, you know, these kids were coming in from these transfers and all that stuff. I just want them to build a team the nice traditional way and just fill in pieces along the way. And it kind of is starting to feel that way. And I can tell you right now, when you do that, yeah, you can get lightning in a bottle if you go the other way with Kazemi or something like that. But really, building this way with high school kids, and then you fill in with a couple of JCs or maybe a transfer here and there, I think is truly the best way for that really true Final Four success that you predict that they potentially could have.
And I think they will get in the Final Four this year. I'm going to stick with that prediction. And I also think that one thing that's really going to help them, you know, the regular season, is the fact that the Beavers are going to be very good. And, you know, you give an example, Arizona State come up here for many years thinking, well, we got to play one tough game. At the very least, we're going to split. That ain't the case anymore. It's going to be rock 'em, sock 'em when the teams come to play in Corvallis and Eugene.
Jeez. Yeah, I mean, this can be a pretty gruesome road trip. But you know what the fun part of it is? Virtually the entire Pac-12, it can be a pretty gruesome road trip. Now,
yes.
the Washington schools actually are going to be a little bit down. I mean, Washington's lost so much, either transfers or graduation, and obviously Ernie Kent's still trying to build that back up in Pullman. But, you know, the Colorado will be back. Utah is really good. Arizona State now with Hurley down at Arizona State, very good. You know, UCLA's got a bunch of talent coming in, and USC's got nowhere else but to go up. So, you know, and then obviously the Bay Area trip and Eugene and Corvallis. So, I mean, virtually every road trip is difficult for sure.
Yeah, no question. Let's switch back over to the NBA. Okay. Do you like that? Do you think that Golden State Warriors have a chance to win the title here? I mean, that might seem like a dumb question to people, but no one thought, even with the great year they had, that they were going to go all the way. Do you think they will, Richard?
I think that it, first of all, a Golden State-Cleveland final is, you know, my favorite, and I'm sure that there's a lot of people who would agree. That's what we want to see, is LeBron v. Curry. Now, you know, it's kind of difficult to at this point in time say, okay, who's going to win that series, because a lot has to do, especially when you get deep in the playoffs. A lot has to do with you know, is one team coming, is rested, another team had to battle, was it a back and forth, are there any, you know, further injuries that potentially could happen to one side? But if they both had to start today and play a seven game series, it's so difficult to not root, or I'm just saying even root sounds weird, or to pick against LeBron. I mean, the guy is a winner, and he puts teams on his shoulders, and he just wills them to win, you know, a lot of times. And the thing is that, you know, LeBron is so talented that if Golden State had a dominant big man, and you were like, okay, well, you know, Cleveland really doesn't have that, and maybe LeBron's got to go down and you know, help defensively there, but Bogut's not dominant, you know. I mean, he's not dominating this series. So you've got the Splash Brothers, and you know, those guys are going to have difficulty against, because LeBron's going to guard one of them, and because he can, and they haven't seen that before. So it would be really difficult for me to pick against the Cavs, especially in a seven game series.
That would be very interesting. You know, it would be Cleveland's first title.
Yeah.
Am I correct there? Yeah, it'd be their first title.
It'd be their first title, yeah.
Yeah, came into the league in 1970, that the same year that the Blazers came in. And I remember that. I remember vividly that for some reason the NBA thought Buffalo and Cleveland and Portland should play each other. They played each other like 12 times that first couple of years. It was strange, but it would be their first title, and you know what, they're crying for their football, and their baseball team's been close. I can't remember if they won a World Series, but it would be something. And you know, remarkably, Richard, not doing without Kevin Love, who was on fire in the playoffs, and probably won't be back there.
Isn't that crazy?
Incredible.
Yeah, it is crazy. And again, it's all about LeBron. And I know LeBron was a little bit of an afterthought for the MVP, but it's just amazing how good that guy is. And you know, I mean, as a coach, can you imagine? You're like, okay, I want you to guard their point guard. Okay, now I want you to guard their center. I mean, it's like he can do it all.
Yeah. Richard, what did you think about the rule changes college basketball? I mean, to me, they missed the boat a little bit on a few things.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's stepping the right, like, you know, pregame dunking. I've been on that case. Not being able to call timeout in the backcourt. They need to eliminate a couple more timeouts. And I would have taken that media thing and not done the 30 seconds. I would have done if you call timeout prior to the media thing. that's the media timeout. What's your take? And I don't think the 5 seconds. Now, if they went 10 seconds, to me, that would be a huge deal. But the 5 seconds, I'm not sure it's going to have a big impact.
Yeah, I think of all of those, and that's probably the one that's that of those, you know, litany of rule changes, I think that difference in the clock, the shot clock, is the one that most people kind of gravitate to, because because that's what most people can see and can kind of put their finger on. But I think you're absolutely right. That 5 seconds is probably not going to make a huge difference, you know, when it comes to the speed of the game. I think it does step in the right direction. I mean, I don't want to take your words out of your mouth, but it does kind of feel like they're at least taking a baby step toward getting this game a little bit faster. Now, you and I had talked about kind of changing the game before. Now, I'm one of those old school folks who just feels like the game itself doesn't have to be the NBA, because everybody wants it to be faster. Like what? Like the NBA. Well, it's not the NBA. It's college, and it's college athletes. It doesn't have the level it doesn't have the best athletes in the world like the NBA does. So it's okay for teams to play half-court basketball. And I guess that's part of, you know, maybe that's just me, but I'm okay with teams coming down, running a play. And if that play doesn't work, instead of just going into an isolation where there's going one on, you know, on everybody, run another play and get a bucket. If the game finishes, 58-48, I'm okay with that. And again, that's just me, and I know that's probably going against the grain, a popular opinion. But, you know, for me, the there are some tweaks for that I definitely would like, but I think you know, the 5 second difference to me is not really accomplishing much at all.
Yeah, I would agree. And you know, it's evident when they went from 45 to 35, scoring was less. So that might say something right there in that regard. Okay, Richard, real quickly, we've got a little less than 2 minutes.
Okay.
I think you're calling for a Golden State. Well, you would like to see that. Are you calling for a Golden State Cleveland final with Cleveland winning? Is that what you're going to do?
Yep. Yes, sir.
Yeah, very, very interesting there. If here's the question again. If David Blatt wins an NBA title, do you retain him?
Yeah, you just got to, because that would just be too weird. I mean, that would be the craziest thing in the history of sports. You know, you take a team, whether it was you doing it or not, to the pinnacle of your sport, and, you know, the parade happens, and then you get called into the GM's office, and you're like, I just don't see it. If they had not made it to the – I think he's safe from here on out. So even if they do lose to Atlanta, which I don't think will happen, but if they did, I don't think he gets fired. I think anything prior to this, he for sure would have gotten fired, because he can always sit back and go, hey, we didn't have a piece of the three-headed monster, which was Kevin Love. And, you know, Miami, if they had lost one of the major pieces – they would not have won the titles they did as well.
And, you know, the interesting thing is that, I think that he definitely will come back. The only thing equivalent to it might have been Billy Martin getting fired 20 times, by Steinbrenner. So, anyway.
I know, but, you know, that was more for show, I think. But, you know, and then he kept hiring him back. It was just crazy.
Yeah. Good night, Richard. Have a great week. We'll talk to you again next week. Listeners, right. Thank you. Everybody make your free throws. We're here every Wednesday night, 10 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, or you can always listen to the podcast. Good night, everybody.
Good night.